I don't know who did that book, but maybe it was one of the so-called Tibetan experts. Some of these Western Tibetan experts know things even we Tibetans don't know. However, there do seem to be certain practices and policies that successive Tibetan governments adopted in Tibet that reflect putting into practice certain Buddhist ideals, such as the Buddhist principle of respecting the natural world, particularly the animal world. For example, all the communities living near the Yamdrok Lake used to rely heavily on fishing in the past. I used to believe that they were probably given exception to fish, but recently I heard about a policy that was adopted during the 5th Dalai Lama's time, where they were discouraged from fishing. And in order to compensate them for that during a particular fishing season, some other communities would band together and provide them an equivalent value in grain so that they would be compensated against their loss. Similarly, in the area near Mount Kailash, there is this Lake Manasarovar. And around Lake Manasarovar, during a particular season, a lot of waterfowl migrate there. They lay their eggs on the shores, and apparently there was again a government policy that during the egg-laying season, they would appoint people to watch over the eggs to make sure they were safe. Of course, there might be individuals who, in addition to taking the salary, probably ate some of the eggs as well. These things happen. But overall, there is this kind of attitude of non-harm. So, even though in Tibet people didn't always follow the principle of non-harm in their work, for example, there were butchers because Tibetans on the whole are meat eaters, so some killing had to be done to supply the meat, this principle was still deeply ingrained in the people. In general, I think this is something that could be applied in the West. Although not everybody has lots of options about the work that they do. At least I think it is good to give serious thought to the kind of work one does and the impact it has on others. And in the modern world particularly, and in industrialized nations where many people do have opportunities to choose the kind of job they take, I think it is best to choose work that does not cause harm to others, that does not exploit or deceive others, either directly or indirectly. I think that's the best way.
Thus, the Dalai Lama added a final component to our quest for happiness at work, a critical factor from the Buddhist perspective. Looking at the impact our work has on others and assuring that we don't intentionally harm others in the work we do. Earlier, we spoke of the different attitudes one can adopt toward one's work, how those who view their work as a calling are clearly happier at work. Those who love their work would continue to do it even if they didn't get paid, if they could afford to. Who become absorbed in their work, who integrate their work with their values, their lives, their very being. These people have a calling. In addition, those with a calling see their work as meaningful, with a wider purpose, and ideally even contribute to the greater good of society or the world. Despite this, from the Dalai Lama's perspective, merely viewing one's work as a calling isn't enough to assure our long-term happiness. Why? Imagine an expert computer hacker hard at work, breaking into secure systems to steal others' funds and sending out a few million computer viruses while he's at it. That individual may love what he's doing, spending long hours in the state of flow, overcoming monumental challenges while utilizing every bit of his skill, knowledge, creativity, and ingenuity. Computers are his life, and his work may even perfectly mesh with his inner values. In this case, a value system based on the age-old philosophy, "Screw you, I'm taking what I can get. He who dies with the most toys wins." And certainly there is a wider impact to his efforts, as he may wreak havoc in millions of lives as computers crash all over the world. This man has a calling. And for that matter, so do many professional criminals, con artists, and others who get such a high from their activities that they would never consider doing other work unless forced to by the legal system, or are fortunate enough to somehow undergo a major transformation of their outlook and inner values. One could even envision a guarded Auschwitz viewing his work as a calling, in his evil, distorted mind, seeing his efforts as contributing to the greater good of the world,